Yo, what is up, everybody? Welcome to episode 4, Street Level Floppies, a show where we highlight creator-owned books and smaller publishers and imprint titles. I am your host, Andrew, and I am here with my buddies and friends and my co-hosts. To my left, I have Chris.
Hey, guys, what's up? Welcome back.
Yeah, and to my right, I have Fred.
How you doing?
And as always, we're here to talk comics with everybody and remind you that we are proud members of the Nation of Nerds. Our goal is to entertain, educate, and introduce you to some new comic books that you might want to give a try. All right, guys, let's go ahead and jump right into some news. There's been a couple of big news stories today, or through the whole week, not just today. And most of it has to do with the movies. There was some casting for Doom Patrol. There was some casting for Swamp Thing and for The Witcher. And then we also had the big Captain Marvel Entertainment Weekly picture reveal with all kinds of pictures from the movie and lots of little things to discuss and get excited for the movie. Is there one of those topics in particular that stands out to you, Fred, that you found interesting?
I was kind of intrigued by the Captain Marvel, especially by seeing like the pictures of the Skrulls. I liked the costumes. I thought it was done well. I even liked Brie Larson's costume as well. But I didn't see quite everybody that was casted in that movie that they have so far. Do you have anything on that?
Yeah, I have. I mean, there, you also have Maria Rambeau was shown, who's, we're thinking, theorizing, will be Monica Rambeau's mother. So we'll get some Spectrum in the future, hopefully. We also saw who we think Jude Law is probably playing Mar-Vell. We saw Ronan. We saw Korath from Guardians of the Galaxy. So there's some cool stuff. Did you happen to see any of that, Chris?
I did. The Skrull looked cool, but I was mostly excited about the Captain Marvel costume. It looked really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, I enjoyed the previous screenshots with the green and blue, you know, outfit that mm-hmm. I know some people didn't like as much. I liked that one, but this one I really liked. That was a good looking picture. The Skrull, like I said, they looked good as well. I did see that potential casting, and hopefully we do get, you know, Spectrum and stuff like that later on. I'll keep my fingers crossed. I don't think so. I think this is just, you know, for the fans who know who she is, but we'll see.
I don't know. I mean, it's set up. She supposedly is a single mom, and she has a daughter. Okay, so it's set in the 90s. So by the time we get back to the timeline where Infinity Wars is, this mm-hmm. young daughter would probably be an adult and ready to take over as, you know, another Captain Marvel or a Spectrum. And it would be Monica, hopefully. That's what I'm hoping. Yeah, that'd be really okay. Cool. And then Mar-Vell looks really cool, too. I think Jude Law is going to be really good in
My whole thing is Marvel likes to do that sometimes. You know, they like to throw, like when I remember watching Homecoming Spider-Man and they had Prowler in it, right? Like Miles' uncle, but I wasn't sure if that was going anywhere or not. But fingers crossed. Yeah. It is. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And then some of these other things. Doom Patrol, Crystal Reed was cast as Abby Arcane Crystal Reed was cast as Abby Arcane for Swamp Thing. And Timothy Dalton was cast as the chief, Dr. Miles Calder, for Doom Patrol, the gentleman in the wheelchair. So you have two kind of – well, no, I don't know if you know who Crystal Reed is. She was in Teen Wolf. She was recently in Gotham. She played Sophia Falcone. Mm. And she did a really good job of that in Gotham. So that's kind of cool. And then Henry Cavill, Superman, is playing the lead character in The Witcher for mm-hmm. video game fans on Netflix.
Yeah, I saw that one. The Witcher, you know, I'm excited. I don't know if you guys know anything about The Witcher, but it's pretty much, I won't get too much into it. We're not a video game podcast, but it's just it's a video game about like a bunch of like Northern Europe kind of folk tales and monsters and stuff like that in that kind of world, like witches and things of that nature.
Kind of Game of Thrones type stuff, maybe?
Or? A little bit. It kind of has that feel to it. There's like really like classical, mythical like creatures like griffins and stuff like that that you see in it. Yeah, so I thought it was a good casting. I think he'll do good. I think he's a pretty good actor. My only question is if he still has the mustache. Is there any CGI, you know, digital stuff
CGI
going on?
CGI mustache.
Yeah, so we'll see about that.
What if – do you think this signals that he's done with Superman? Or is this just kind of a pause?
I don't know, because DC is filming shit, right? Like, they're filming stuff. Yeah. So I'd assume that if he was working on Man of Steel, he wouldn't be on this. So I assume that they just have no plans for him right now to work on Man of Steel.
Yeah. No Man of Steel 2. It doesn't sound like it, at least. And I don't know how you have your universe without Superman. That's weird. That's like having Marvel without Iron Man or Captain America.
Yeah. You know? It's
we'll see.
It's interesting. People have been asking for Man of Steel 2 for, you know, people want that more than they want anything else, it seems. You know, the DCEU fans, every time I hear them talk about a movie they want, it's Man of Steel 2. Every time they make an announcement, they say, okay, but where's Man of Steel 2? So I don't know, you know, what's going on with that. That's weird. I'm under the impression that they're going to reboot this whole thing, but that's a conversation for another time.
Yeah. And what about you, Fred? Did you see anything in those other castings, like you're interested in Swamp Thing or Doom Patrol, or did you play Witcher?
No, I saw another Doom Patrol one was what, Brendan Fraser being like the Robot Man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now that I'm really interested, because, you know, I often ask myself, whatever happened to Brendan Fraser? Because he was hot one time. When he was like Encino Man and all those other movies back then. But I think that might be like perfect casting. Actually, you know, after our last podcast, I've been thinking about it and stuff. And I'm going to break the news to you guys, but I actually signed up for the network.
Nice.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
After all our ranting and stuff, I gave in.
I probably will too.
Listen, me too, man. Me too. It's what we have to do, okay?
Yeah.
But we have to complain about it a little bit. Yeah. We wouldn't be true comic book fans, right. I guess. It's part of what we do.
We complain and we consume.
Yes.
Yes. Very cool. Yeah.
Now,
all right.
There were. Well,
go ahead.
There were screenshots, or were those official set pictures from Doom Patrol, or were those kind of unofficial?
Oh, pictures? Yeah, those were official. Those were that they actually show the robot, they show the mask.
Yeah.
And then they show, I don't know all the characters' names, but they show the one that's all wrapped up like a mummy.
So those were all official shots.
Yes, those are all official shots of stuff they've been filming.
That looks cool.
That looked better quality, I must say, than Titans. Just from what I saw of those shots, those costumes looked almost straight off of the comic book cover. Someone had the comic book cover. Where Titans, it seems like, I'm not quite sure what they're doing with some of the costumes, but it is what it is. We'll see when it comes out. But yeah, I'm excited. And then Swamp Thing, I just don't know. Are they going to CGI Swamp Thing? You know, I don't know. Do you have the money on a streaming service to CGI?
I really wish that was a film, but, you know, I'll give it a chance anyway.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I guess we're going to go ahead and jump right into our comics. We have 6 great books this week. I enjoyed all of them. There was a lot of good books. There was a lot of good indie books, because a few books didn't even make the list that were really good. But we're going to head and kick off the first one. It's going to be Leviathan number 2. Till Death Do Us Part. Part 2. While Ryan DeLuca tries to piece together exactly how his friend summoned a giant monster, government defense forces take the fight to the depths of the earth where monsters dwell, then of course they piss off the wrong monster. Written by John Layman, art and cover by Nick Patera, colorist Michael Garland, color assist by Brandon Daniels, not quite sure what that means, letters by John Layman, variant cover by Steve Skycrock, I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing, published by Image Leviathan. Chris, go ahead and tell us about Leviathan.
Okay, for starters, I really enjoyed the artwork. I felt that the pencils and the colors were really fun to look at. It's kind of wild, right? It's kind of wacky, which I really enjoyed with some bright colors. The plot was okay. I'm enjoying the story so far. It's kind of fun. Yeah, like the whole like summoning the monster thing and it doing its thing. I felt like during the plot there were some points that were kind of poking fun at like, you know, some of like the crazy military people. So like you have that crazy general character. She's like, that was a really mm-hmm. funny moment in the book, I felt. So it definitely gives you some laughs. Overall, it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
Very cool. Go ahead, Fred.
No, I'll just go off that point with the military, because I think we spoke about this before Chris got on, and I felt like, as my kids would say, that the book was kind of sneak dissing the military and even maybe the Space Force current day. So yeah, that's the feel I got from it, you know, just like going after like the dinosaurs and stuff. I thought that was done really well. But when the dinosaurs were introduced, it was kind of cool to me because it felt like, to me reading it, it felt like Jumanji style.
Yep.
Meets like Land Before Time, because you see like Sarah and Ducky running down the way. But yeah, I like that. I totally like the art too. I thought it was tremendously fun. And there was like some panels that were like done really well, especially as the kid's name, like Ryan, his apartment, like just looking like if you did like looked at the panels, like a Where's Waldo book, and you saw like portraits of certain wrestlers, like in the '80s and different things. Like I think he had like a little picture of like a My Little Buddy and stuff. It was totally like geared towards like '80s, '90s toys and stuff. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was decent. It was a pretty decent book.
Yeah, the book to me was a lot of fun. The art just is crazy. It's a crazy art, and it fits the fact that it makes the story work, because the story's a little crazy in its own way. You know, it's kind of like homage to, I think Godzilla and things like that, the main monster, because we don't know what he is. And then you have dinosaurs overtaking the city and the government making poor choices to just go kill all the monsters instead of trying to reason with the monsters, you know, the very Godzilla stuff. And then all the detail, the color, the way it's drawn, it's just kind of wacky. It's a comic book. You're like, they're not trying to make you believe this is real. Mm-hmm. At any point in this whole comic book, they're like, you're in a crazy comic book story, embrace it and just go with the silly. And by going with the silly, I had a really good time reading this book. I liked the first one. And I like this one as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's definitely right. Like a central theme of Godzilla is you see like a scientist telling the government exactly what not to do, and then they do it anyway and make everything worse.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like poking fun at like the higher ups who maybe are not, you know, very thoughtful with some of their choices. And it was really fun, like you said. It's not trying to make you believe any of this is true. It's just fun with some bright colors and some great artwork. It's a little bit like it's by no means childish, right? It does have some adult humor, you know, like the part in the beginning in the hospital where the doctor's kind of telling everybody the same thing, you know, even though he just kind of heard the doctor say that to someone else, he's telling it to him too. So. There's some like adult humor in it too.
The interaction with our main character and the priest. There's some little adult little jabs in that one too. Yeah, there's a lot of there's some adult humor for sure, definitely. Red, do you have anything else to add to that one?
I'll just add like the final panel there with his girlfriend and stuff. Like I think she's. I'm not going to spoil it, but it would just. Seeing that part kind of has me intrigued to want to see what happens maybe in issue 3. And that says a lot, especially coming from issue 1. I think out of all of us, I did not like the book. I thought the art was tremendous at that time too, but the story didn't catch me. But with the filler and kind of stretching the story out, I'm kind of becoming invested in the story.
Definitely. Yeah, I want to see it. It's a short, I think it's a short run, only a 5-comic run. So they're pushing everything out there fast. That was my complaint, that I kind of felt like a lot happened in this book. Like boom, boom, they're bouncing around. They even took away from the main character for a while to focus on the military. Right. But if you only have 5 books, you can't miss a round. You got to get all this info in as fast as you can so you can keep going. So, yeah, good stuff. So, okay, if we're going to score this, Chris, what are you going to give it today?
I give it a solid 3. It was a good book to read. You know, yeah, it was a 3. Enjoyable.
All right. Excellent. And Fred?
I'll give it a 3.5 just because, like I said, like those panels with the artwork of wrestlers and stuff. I'll give it a 0.5 higher than Chris. You had me with the Ultimate Warrior.
I also am going to give it a 3.5. I liked the first one, so I was kind of already in a space where I enjoyed this book. And it kept the same. It didn't get super better or anything, but it maintained the same level for me. Of the wackiness and the craziness. And like I said, I'm just taking this book for what it is. It's a crazy ride, and I'm on the ride. So 3.5. Yeah. All right, let's go into our next book. Book number 2 is The Dreamy Number 1. From Upheaval of the Sandman Universe 1. I'm sorry, from the Upheaval of the Sandman Universe Number 1 rises The Dreaming, a kingdom in chaos. There is a place where stories are born. Today its walls lie slashed and bleeding. Dream has abandoned his realm, and until he is found, its residents must protect its broken borders alone. But the most senior storysmiths are tormented by invasive secrets. The warden, Lucen, is doubting his own mind, and beyond the gates, something horrific wants with tooth and talon. Only Dora, the monstrous, finds opportunity in madness, stealing dreams for the highest bidders, but she has no idea how deep the danger lies. Meanwhile, in Dream's gallery, something new is growing. Written by Simon Spurrier, art by Bilkis Everly, colorist Matt Lopes, letters by Simon Bolin, cover by Jay Lee and June Chung, variant cover by Yarnick Paquette and Nathaniel Fairburn, created by Neil Gaiman, published by Vertigo. This is Dreaming. Okay, that's a mouthful of all the stuff. And even the description was kind of hard to get through. This is a bit of a complex book, as all Sandman books are if you're new to the Sandman universe. You had to really have read that first Sandman universe book that came out a couple of weeks ago. I think it was 3 weeks maybe. It really set the stage. There's an intro story for this. It really gives us an idea who Dora is and explains her motivation and what's going on, because this book jumps right into it. So I would say that's a bit of a knock, because it didn't really make it clear to people that they needed to read that Sandman Universe book first before they jumped onto this number one. Now, for me, who's someone who's read some Sandman, is into Sandman, I enjoyed this book very much. I think it was vintage Sandman, even though this isn't Gaiman. Spurrier did an excellent job of capturing Gaiman's voice and staying within that fantastical world that the Sandman universe is. So I enjoyed it a lot. The book was beautifully done. It was a good looking book. It really made you fall into that fantasy world that the Sandman universe is, the dream world. And I'm in love with the character Dora. I want to see more of her. And she's a brand new character. And I think she's going to really highlight, of the books coming forward, I think she's going to be the real highlight, me personally. So, Fred, what do you think?
Well, like you said, if you didn't read this book, it can be hard. Because in the beginning, I think I was texting you in our message board and went, excuse me. And I didn't get it. It was too complex. After like, I think I said 3 pages, I kept putting down the book because I couldn't handle it. I'm like, I don't know what the hell's going on here. I'm lost. Am I missing something? You told me that I needed to read that book. So after I read that book, I had a better understanding of the universe and where the characters were coming from. And I actually had a little bit more appreciation for it other than the art. I felt like after reading that and understanding the characters, I felt like this book was extremely executed well. I mean, this, like, just with the narrative and like the visuals, I felt like the colors in this book was refreshing. The art was beautiful. There's a lot of characters that I'm really interested in now because of, you know, reading that. Otherwise, I would be just lost if I didn't read that, because, you know, this is my first time into the Sandman universe. This is my first step, and we jumped all in. So,
yeah.
Chris, how do you feel about it?
Okay, so I guess I'm the only one that unfortunately didn't get a chance to read the previous one, you know, that kind of sets you up for this book. Despite that, though, I have to say and echo you guys' sentiments that the art on this book is absolutely gorgeous. When you get to these fantastical, dreamlike states in the comic, it's executed so well. It really looks beautiful. So that caught my eye. As far as the plot, like I said, I wasn't aware of the previous one, so I couldn't, you know, quite get into the world building. I did read some previous Sandman, like maybe years ago, but not enough that I'd remember everyone. So I'm gonna have to go back and read that so that I'm able to kind of pick up on this. But just as going into it, if you're just going into it, like I said, the art is enjoyable. And also, there's a story to be told there. You know, even though I don't have all of the necessary information, you know, to know who everyone is, I still get a sense of the plot. You know, you get a sense that Dora is doing something that she's not supposed to be doing. You get a sense that there are people who are tasked with keeping things in order. And I really enjoyed, you know, some of the dialogue and the writing was presented really well. And I felt like it really captured, like, just the way some of the characters look. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's definitely how someone like that would talk. So on that end, I felt like that's a plus for their world building. This is really honest world building that makes sense, I feel, that really fits. It isn't just wild to be wild. I feel like there's really a world here, a living world. And I'm really excited to learn more about it. So I'm going to go back and read and really delve into this because I want to return to this book.
Yeah, I would definitely read the Sandman Universe 1. What it does is it has a story by each writer who's doing one of the new Sandman books. So there's a little bit about Lucifer, which is a book coming out. There's a little bit about House of Whispers. There's a little bit about, what's the other one? The Boy, the Magic Book or something like that. He looks like a Harry Potter almost. Mm. And so there's a little bit about it to kind of lay down the plot for you for each of these stories with an overall understanding of the fact that Dream is missing. The main character is missing. Yeah. And that's what's creating the problem. And nobody knows where he is. So yeah, that I think from reading that, you don't have to go back and read all the old Sandman stuff.
Yeah.
Now it would definitely be nice because you're going to get even more enriched by this world because there's a lot of returning characters. But like I said, Dora's a new character and I really liked her a lot. And I feel like I can just get into her without not having, you know, the other stuff and why her motivation was exposed a little better in that last book. And so this one, like I said, why is she doing the crazy stuff she's doing? But I'm in love with the character. I like the idea of this person who's bucking the system to do things what's best for her. And she has some kind of conflict with our main character of the whole universe. And I want to see where it goes. And yeah, beautiful looking book. I described it when Fred was like, I don't know what's going on with this book. I'm like, you got to think Alice in Wonderland. You have to think like Wizard of Oz. And I don't mean movies. I mean books, you know, like really dig deep. And we're not talking about the first book. We're talking about maybe the fourth book. And you have to kind of have a little understanding of the universe. But it's a real fantasy, this whole thing. It's a dream. Everything's about dreams in essence. So I liked it a lot. Fred, anything else to add?
Did you say that Spurrier wrote this?
Yes.
I'm just curious, like, how he's going to, like, bring this whole world together, because this is totally new to me, but I'm definitely really interested, and I'm going to continue reading it.
Gaiman created this one, even though it's a new character. So Gaiman has his hands and his fingers on everything that's going to happen in all these books, I'm sure. So he has the master tie-it-all-together idea that he's spreading. I'm guaranteed that he's dropping down to the rest of these guys.
So, or he's not, and he's just getting paid for it all.
Well, he's writing one of the books. I don't remember which one he is, but he is writing one of the books, but not all
nice,
of them.
Nice, nice.
Very cool. All right, so let's go ahead and give some scores. Fred, if you're going to give a score for this book.
Well, since Dora does do a lot of exploring in this book, I'll give it a 4.
Very cool. And Chris, you didn't like that? Control.
Yeah, yeah.
And has a exploration with a demon.
It was so clever.
That
went
caught
over
me
my
off
head.
Guard. Fred with a pun. All right. Chris, what would you give it?
I give it a 3, another solid 3. But, you know, that's more, that score is kind of for myself for dropping the ball and not, you know, reading the previous one. I'm really jealous that you guys, you know, read it, because now I want to be a part of this too, because this really seems like a good world to delve into. So I'm going to definitely make that some homework and get that done.
Yeah. To be fair, it should have been announced better, because I didn't even think about it. And I actually went back and read my issue, because it had been weeks since I read it. And I said, I'm going to go back and relook over that story and make sure
so
I know
then,
what I'm talking
that's a,
about.
That's a good, you know, thing you said, because then I'm wondering, is this, are they, you know, of course they're trying to bring on new fans, but I'm wondering if this is really just for the fan base of, you know, the Sandman people.
I think it's a combo.
Because if you were into Sandman, then you would know that book came out, right? Like, it wouldn't be a...
Yeah. Yeah, so Sandman fans are already ready and rolling, and most of your really high scores and props that you're hearing on Twitter and different places are probably people that have read the universe, and they're like, yep, this is what I want. Because he really did do a good job of... It didn't feel like somebody who didn't understand the universe came in and wrote a book. That's the biggest why I'm going to give it a 4.
Nice.
Because I feel like this guy gets this book, and he gets this universe, and he didn't miss a beat. He jumped right in with his own stuff, but he's not trying to tell a different kind of story in someone else's universe. He's telling a Sandman story. So
nice.
I was really happy with
nice,
it.
Nice.
All right. Okay. Next, let's see what we have. Okay. Number 3, we have Clan Killers number 3, like the demented stepchild of Game of Thrones, Braveheart, and Mark Millar's Kick-Ass, Clan Killers brings readers into an ancient Ireland filled with clans, mystics, warriors, and monsters of mythic proportion. Your favorite medieval pair get into darker musings as Finola and Cillian find themselves face-to-face with the ancient Durg of Celtic myth. These powerful forefathers to vampires do not take kindly to strangers, and especially not strangers who want to murder them dead. Meanwhile, Valor's whispers continue to play on Padraig the Grotesque, as his daughters and kingdom wonder how long they can live in fear of a madman. Written by Sean Lewis, artist Antonio Fuso, colorist Stefano Simeoni, letters by Dave Sharp, published by Aftershock. Clan Killers. Fred, this one's all you.
Okay. Now, the previous two issues of Clan Killers were very fast-paced. This one slows down a bit. It has a definite different pace, which I really enjoyed, because you get to see like Sean Lewis be able to shine with his dialogue and his storytelling. Finola, the daughter, paints a picture of how life used to be in the beginning with her father, King Padraig. And it became all game before he became all Game of Thronesy, which you know, if you've been reading the previous two issues, this is a change of pace, because in the first issue, I believe, or the second issue, Finola was made out to be basically like a villain. Villain. I really enjoy this book. I like the Irish mythology. I like the sisters. Is it Killian, Finola, and is the other one Reagan? I think that's her name. Is like, so like we get to see like you know, Lewis delves into storytelling of these three sisters, you know, tells a little bit of story about them, and which is good, because now in the previous two, it's so fast paced, you know, there's heads rolling everywhere, literally. Yeah. And, I enjoy this book a lot. Maybe, you know, maybe I could be partial because I'm 50% Irish. I don't know, but I enjoy it, man. I really like this book. What do you think about it, Chris?
I too enjoyed it. I'm one of my favorite ways to learn about a culture is through its mythology. I don't know, ever since a kid, I've just always loved, like, lore and mythology and things like that. So I'm definitely familiar with, you know, things like the Dullahan, which is a character in the book, you know, or the Headless Horseman. You know, people are more familiar with Headless Horseman than its actual name, the Dullahan. So that was really interesting and nice to see in the book, for sure. Outside of that, like you said, it has a lot of, like, moments, I would say. It has a lot of moments that just make you, like, there's a moment between the father and the daughter, like, in the woods, and he goes after her, and I'm like, whoa, okay. You know, then what am I getting into? So that was nice. It does have, like, a Game of Thrones-y type feel off that, and I'm always for that. A big fan of the books, at least. And, yeah, so I enjoyed this book, too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, to me, I thought of the king as like almost getting to the Mad King in Lord of the Rings. He's not quite there, but he's on his way. He's you know, been in essence possessed, and he's being led around by this. Was it Morgan? Was that her name? The woman that cursed him?
Heck.
That Philona is looking for, the witch?
I believe so. I can't remember the name right now.
I think it's Morgan. It might even be Morgan Le Fay, but I may be wrong. That was really cool. I liked that this girl, she's kind of got that Arya Stark thing where she's out there doing her own thing. She's not scared to get in the mix, fight, where her sisters are a little more on the princessy side, let's just say.
Right.
And that's why they stay and they kind of play by the rules and but yeah, it was a great book. I binged. I read all three. I hadn't read it before, and it did. It was a fast read. I read all three relatively quickly. The art is very kinetic and fast. That was something too. I'm not sure if I enjoy it or not. I'm still in the middle with that part of it. But the dialogue and the story itself is something I liked a lot. So definitely enjoyed. Fred?
Yeah, I mean, like, when you were mentioning, like, the madness of the king, like, it was cool because you get the moments in this book to see, like, a different side of him. Like, he actually shed tears. They showed his life in the beginning, which was different, you know. So we got to feel, like, almost, like, all different personalities of this guy. Like, that was a good part. And I also liked that, you know, it wasn't just, like, a family issue in this book. Like, you got the Irish people questioning his leadership, which was a different spin all into itself. And just at the end, like, with the banshees and stuff, it makes me wonder what's happening next. What's going to go down next? I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, like vampires, banshees, all kinds of things. Headless horsemen. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Chris, anything to add?
Yeah, I guess I'm enjoying the world building. I'm enjoying, like, you know, you have the kind of the real, you know, political side to it, like you said, with the people questioning the king and stuff like that. But you also have kind of this fantasy, you know, on the other side. And I always love when those two things converge. This is, I think, going to be good going forward. I'm excited.
Excellent. So, Fred, do you know, is this an ongoing series or is this a short series?
I'm not quite sure offhand right now, but with most Aftershock books, they at least go 5 to 6 issues, I believe. So, I mean, I hope it continues. And
yeah,
just to, like, mention something about the art, though, I think you and I spoke about this, but it does, like, it might not be, like, the greatest art, but I think, like, he goes with the feel of just drawing things to make it look like mythology books, you know, like you would pick up at the library, like old school, how it was drawn back there. But maybe that's just my point of view, but I think that's what he's going for, because I've seen Fuso's work on other things like Black Hammer covers and stuff, and I know that this guy can draw.
Interesting. Very interesting. So what score would you give it, Fred?
I would give it a 4. I liked it quite a bit.
Big fan of it. Yeah, you're the one that turned me on to it. You've been reading it for a while. We've been talking about it. Almost made the list when the second one came out. But yeah, cool. Chris, what would you go with?
I'd go with a 3.5. I really enjoyed it. And I'm going to keep reading it till it ends.
Yeah, I'd go with a 4 as well. I really enjoyed this book. I'm glad I discovered it. It's something that I kind of put off. I kept telling him, yeah, I picked it up. I put it down. I picked it up. I put it down. I told him, I think they still have all the first two copies at my comic book shop. And I was lucky. I went and they had all three and I grabbed them right then and there. So I got lucky to actually have them because I prefer that to have the actual copy whenever I can. So, but yeah, 3.5. I'm sorry, a 4. I enjoyed it very much. Yeah. Very cool. All right. Let's move on to the next book. The War Bears, number 1. From the Booker Prize winning award author of The Handmaid's Tale comes this historical fictional graphic novel tracing the golden age of comic books. Arsenette, a fictional Nazi fighting superheroine, is created at the peak of World War II by comic book creator Al Zurakowski, who dreams of making it big in the early world of comics publishing. A story that follows the early days of comics in Toronto, a brutal war that greatly strains Al personally and professionally, and how the rise of post-war American comics puts an end to his dreams. International and New York Times best-selling novelist Margaret Atwood and acclaimed artist Ken Stacey collaborate for one of the most highly anticipated comic books and literary events. As I said, written by Margaret Atwood, art and cover by Ken Stacey, digital art technician Josie Christensen, designer Sarah Terry, published by Dark Horse. War Bears. I believe you had War Bears, right?
Yeah. I'm going to start by saying that this was really refreshing to read this week. This was one of my favorite books this week. Not just because I have a soft spot in my heart for like golden age comics, but because this was a lot of different things. It's kind of a history book, talking about how comic books were made back then. You know what purpose they serve, the people who worked in them, stuff like that. That's really good, and then. On the other hand, it's actually telling another story, so you get a sense of like kind of the werebears, right? Like you see a couple of pages where it's his comic that he's writing, but you get to see that. So I believe, I'm pretty sure that going forward, that kind of duplicity, the dual storytelling will kind of continue, and you'll see both stories intertwine with one another as the story progresses, which I was interested in. And also, it had some great characters and great dialogue and great writing. And on top of that, you know, based on what I've read, like, because this book made me do some research and look into it. Based off what I've read, like, this is supposed to be a story talking about the disillusionment of this kid, of the comic book industry. And, like, kind of teach the reader how comic book changed pre-World War II and post-World War II. And how the industry changed a lot post-World War II, and it no longer was what the kid wanted to be a part of. At least that's kind of what she says in her interview. So this is not like spoiler stuff, as far as the first issue goes. Overall, it was just great in what it tried to do. And I really, really enjoy reading it.
Very good. Fred?
I liked how Alan was portrayed. Like, he was a likable underdog, someone to root for in the beginning of the book. And, you know, it wasn't just like his struggles at work or with the book, but also at home with his father, which showed a lot. Especially, like, I think he was the only son that stayed home. and his other two brothers were fighting in the war, and his dad kind of took it out on him for, you know, chasing his comic book dreams. I mean, it definitely gives you potential to, like, somebody to root for. And just how he was undermined, like, by his boss and the other people that worked with him, yeah, and just see his struggle, just to see that. It almost felt like, to me, like, his life was... I hate making movie references all the time, but, like, it felt like Rudy, but with comic books.
Yeah, I could see that.
And it was... I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the art. Now, like, the Word Bearers part, I couldn't get into that, but, like, his story, I enjoyed that. What do you think, Andrew?
Yeah, I really liked this book, too. It was a mesh. You know, he's a little bit Steve Rogers without powers, the Steve Rogers before he gets the serum. You know, this little scrawny guy that couldn't get into the military and he feels bad about it. And the world felt a little bit like what you would see in the Agent of Carter TV show. You know, you have the traditional kind of macho guy who's kind of very, you know, rude in the way he portrays and treats other women. And then the boss is a female. And then you have this kid who just wants to break into comics. And it's very obvious that his story and his creations are him living vicariously through his comic. You know what I mean? He is making himself, he puts himself in the comic as the mechanic, and he puts, probably that's his boss that's going to be the werebear, I'm assuming. I'm taking a wild guess. So you have this guy who, it reminds me of, if I was going to say movies, did you ever see Cool World? Where yes. the guy is drawing his comics. At some point, the character he's drawing in his real life are going to come out, and they're going to explode in something. That's what I think, at least. Mm-hmm. So I really liked it. And I think the art style gave me a feel of old style comics as well. So that was something else I liked. Pretty neat. Pretty neat comic. Chris?
Yeah, this is gonna be fun. It was refreshing because it was something different. I haven't read too many comic books about making comic books. So that was really fun. I'm hoping that, you know, as there was a lot of things in that first issue that looked like they can be explored, like that Fred kind of touched on, like his relationship with his father, you know, his relationship with his brothers who are fighting in the war, his relationship with his mom, and his relationship with his boss and his coworker. It's like a lot that they put in, but it wasn't, like, don't get me wrong, it was well-paced, it was well put together, it had a good structure, and it didn't confuse you. And so these are all plot points that I'm looking to see be explored later on and further in future issues.
Fred?
I mean, I can't say that it wasn't like my favorite book of the week, but I mean, because we had so many good books, but I still enjoyed this book and I look forward to, you know, picking up the next issue. I definitely didn't know what War Bears was about. I thought when we chose the books, I was thinking bears with guns and things like that, but mm-hmm. We got a whole different story, so it was a great surprise, actually.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought it was going to be more like that little bit we got of the War Bear. I thought the whole book was going to be like that. I didn't know we were going to get this other story of the comic book writer. And as Chris said, yeah, it was very different, and I liked that. It was a nice mix-up of what we've been getting lately. We've been having a lot of horror, and of course, we always have plenty of superheroes. So it was something different, something exciting and interesting, and I'm definitely going to read it again. So, Chris, what would you give it score-wise?
I'll give it a 4.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And Fred?
I'll give it a 3.
3. Well, I'm right in the middle. I'm going to give it a 3.5. I did like it a lot. I didn't feel it quite was the level of some of the other books I've given a 4 today. That was just me. But yeah, very good book. And I'm looking forward to seeing the next issue for sure. All right. Let's see. Our next book. A lot of hype for this book. The next book is Border Town Number 1. When a crack in the border between worlds releases an army of monsters from Mexican folklore, the residents of Devil Forks, Arizona, blame the ensuing weirdness. the shared nightmares, the outwardly random radio transmissions, the mysterious goat mutations on goddang illegals. With racial tensions supernaturally charged, it's up to the new kid in town, Frank Dominguez, and a motley crew of high school misfits to discover what is really going on in this town torn between worlds. Written by Eric Esquivel, art and cover by Ramon Villalobos, colorist Tamara Bonvillain, letters by Daron Bennett, variant cover by Jorge Jimenez, published by Vertigo, Border Town. Okay. Little insight on our show. We kind of do a little draft and we pick books. And I was picking last. And I was picking last because I was hoping not to get Border Town. And don't misunderstand that to think that I didn't want to do Border Town, because I've been talking about Border Town forever with these guys. But I feel a little pressure to talk about Border Town. This story really hit me in a personal way. A little of my background. I live in Tucson, Arizona. I went to high school in a border Arizona town named Douglas, Arizona, one high school town right on the border. So this really felt like a lot of my life. There was a lot of little references and a lot of little things that I could relate to instantly. I didn't have to think about them very long. I instantly understood the reference. I instantly connected to a lot of these references. So the book hit me in a personal way. And for that reason alone, I love this book. But looking past all of that, I really want people to realize this is a great book. There's an interesting supernatural story. It brings a bit of realism of what really does happen along the border, the mixing of cultures. I love the folklore. I love that it's a little bit wacky. That's part of Villalobos' art style. He brings a cartoonistic look to his characters that makes it fun to go along with what could be a little bit of a scarier book if it was drawn maybe a different way. This book just blew me away, and I'm kind of overwhelmed with all the stuff, so I'm going to pass it on to Fred.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, this is my pick of the week. It's the best book I read all week, hands down. And the reason why I say that is just because even though I may not be Mexican, but I am 50% Irish, so I guess I could fit in with Francisco.
Yeah.
But we're not going to go there. The thing that I do fit in with is like the story and how real it is to real life, that what people go through to this day, especially like there's things in here with like political things that people might be triggered by, might be turned off by, may per se with the rednecks in the beginning, but it's real. This is how people are. This is how people face things each and every day. There's issues with the Can't Breathe sweatshirt on and stuff. These are topics. And if you hide from them and have fear of them, I mean, this is life, man. I'm glad that these things are put in the book. I'm seriously excited. I also like the story. The story was great. It's told well. I mean, it was so good. Like like everything about it. I read it like 3 times. No other book I read more than this book. I read this book 3 times. I enjoyed it that much. The art, like you said, is great. It complements the story so well. It helps go through it. And you had me, I mean, just at the beginning, when you give me luchador masks, skateboards, and chupacabras, I'm down. Let's roll. Yeah. What do you think, Chris?
Okay, so you mentioned this in the solicit, but who published this?
It's Vertigo, I'm sorry.
Vertigo, and that's like an imprint of DC.
That's an imprint of DC. Mm-hmm.
Right, so shout out to them for, you know, being brave enough to, you know, publish this book. This book is incredibly important right now because, you know, I try not to get too political and I won't, but there are some injustices being done to a lot of people that no way you look at it is right. I don't care what side of the political spectrum you're on. there are just certain things that are right and certain things that are wrong. And I'm really glad that this book is pointing things out about the way that people's mentalities are. There's a lot of symbolism in this book. It talks a lot about people's fears, and how people are driven off fears into action, which I think is very important right now. This is overall, I agree with you, Fred. This is one of my favorite books this week as well. This is extremely important. And I feel that, you know, despite what your beliefs may be, I think you should just take a look at it. Take a look at the book, and it may give you a perspective that you may not have had. You know, the beginning, the opening of the book is really impactful because you get two perspectives of the same problem. Right? You get someone who feels that, you know, I won't spoil it, but you get someone who feels that their country is at risk and they have a right to protect it. And you get another perspective where someone's trying to, you know, make a better life for themselves and they feel they have a right to do so. You know, and so right off the bat, you get two conflicting perspectives. And that is very interesting. And I have not seen that yet in 2018 of a comic book that talks about this issue. And so I was really happy that this came out. And I hope people buy it. I hope it gets the support. I hope it makes the waves that it needs to make online. And I really hope people read it.
Yeah, definitely. I feel the same way. Again, I'm trying not to get too political, but that opening is what I know has thrown a few people off, but I can tell you that's real. And I know it's more hypersensitive in the world we live in. This is a topic that is very in the news right now. But as a kid who grew up on the border, that's always been a story for us.
Yeah.
There has always been militia along the border trying to do things their way and feel that it's okay to hunt down people coming over the border. So it's very natural to me. I don't see this as poking at somebody. I see this as you're presenting what life on the border is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know all of our writer's background, but I do know he lived in Tucson for a while. He wrote for the newspaper here in town, and he wrote for a couple other small publications. So I'm assuming that a lot of his background will have some similarities to mine. And so he's writing from a place of experience, which is what we want from our authors and why we need these diverse voices. You know, we talked about Vida Ayala last week. You know, she's giving a different, diverse voice that we don't have in comics. The same thing with Eric Esquivel. He's giving us another voice and showing us a different story. And again, it's a great story. I mean, everyone who's read it will tell you the story is great. And they're hooked for the next one. You know, you have monsters and you have, you know, these interesting group of kids, very Stranger Things. It's Stranger Things in many ways. So embrace this interesting, different perspective of a story that you may actually connect to very well. That's what I'm hoping people will do. Fred?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely very connecting. The story, just like the dialogue throughout the whole book, whether it's with like the students with each other, whether it's Francisco and his mom and her boyfriend, it's all like, man, you feel like you're there. You almost feel like you know these people. It's so well written. Like, this book, dude, I mean, man, there's nothing in this book that I didn't not like. And I mean, I can say that. I am not offended for people in the beginning portrayed a certain way because of a certain color they are. I mean, okay, I'll just out myself right now. I'm the white guy on this podcast. I'm not offended. If you are, maybe you should look in the mirror more. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, this book, to me, it's, this is real. We need more books like this.
Yeah.
We need more books with, like, diversity, with all different things. Like, I mean, everybody needs a voice. So then everybody can connect and understand each other more. And this book, I feel like, does it. But it even, like, just the chupacabras and stuff. I mean, I've heard the legends and stuff with that, like with like friends and things, and they would always talk about it. Like if we take the trash out at night, they'd be like, "Hey, man, make sure the chupacabra doesn't get you homes." Like I'm like, I'm like, "What? What are you talking about? He's a Rottweiler." But you know, yeah. I mean, I didn't understand it, but the older I got and stuff, and I understood and looked at the, you know, the mythology and legends. But enough about like that stuff. What sets apart like this book, like to me, like we read the books on PDFs for the most part. I got the book in my hands and the art and the colors pop so much. Dude, this is so great. This is seriously, that's, I can't say enough about this book. I mean, I got to change my pants after this, this book. That's how much I love it.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. One other thing I'd add that I thought of when you're saying, and the kids are realistic. They don't, it doesn't feel like an adult writing kids dialogue. So they feel like teenagers. It some of the things they talk about and the way they interact with each other feels pretty natural to me, which is kind of hard to do for an adult sometimes, you know?
Yeah. Especially the one part where the one girl, she says, he says, you know, one of the kids is a Nazi. And she tells him, Francisco, that he's a Nazi. And he's like, oh, she thinks that he may be one. And finds out that he tells her that he's also 50% Mexican and Irish. And she corrects him and says, don't make yourself seem like a centaur. That you're 50% this and 50% that. She was like, you're also American. And that's what people really, that's the true lesson of this book right there. That was powerful right there. I mean, if you don't get that and you're just angered at the beginning, you don't get the true meaning of this book.
Exactly. You know, like you guys said last week, we kind of touched on this. You know, you need diverse storytellers to get different stories. If you get upset because a certain person of a certain background got given a comic book, then you don't have a respect for true storytelling like you pretend to. You know, if you really love storytelling, you're going to want to hear different types of stories. The only way to hear different types of stories is different types of writers. You know, and like Fred said, you know, that line, that was my favorite line. There's no such thing as being half this or half that. You are just what you are, and we're all American. You know, when it comes down to it, we all, you know, provide a piece of American culture. You know, American culture is a lot of things. It isn't just one thing. You know, that's the beauty of it all. You know, I really enjoy this. I'm so glad, you know, stories are coming out like this. And what can I say? You know, again, shout out to DC for publishing this and, you know, making waves. Also, you know, just to get away from that, could you say again, you read on the solicit who did the variant cover?
Oh, it was Jorge Jimenez.
So that variant cover, dude, you're a beast.
Yeah.
That's a beastie cover, man. The regular cover is cool too, but that variant is, oh man.
Yep. I got the variant. I got both. without a doubt. When I saw that, the pictures come out of that variant, I go, oh, I have to get that. But then I also had to get the original, it being, you know, it's the first copy of this book.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that is a great cover. There's a lot. And then shout out to, it's Tamara Bolvin. She did the coloring on this book. Yeah. It's all together. It's a great book. Excellent job. And I like, you know, if you don't know Villalobos, you should go check out him and oh, no, I'm not going to remember his name. They did them Nighthawk together. David Walker. They did this Nighthawk series that only made it so far before it got canceled. It's excellent. Definitely check it out. If you want to see a African-American Batman in Chicago, oh, brutal, and it's great. Great, great, great. I can't recommend that book more. Another great one by Villalobos. All right, so if you're going to score this, Fred...
Well, here's my first one, but I'm giving it a 5.
Fred with a big 5. Chris.
This is a 5.
Oh my God. I got to keep the record perfect here and give it a 5 as well. So we're going to go with 5 fives. This is the first time the show we've all agreed on a book to give it all the 5s.
Yeah.
Wow. Please support this book. Go out. I've heard that stores ran out of this book. Order it. Order it from Midtown. Order it. I'll see if you guys can order it from here in town because it's Tucson.
Yeah.
My comic stores have tons of them. You know, Local Boy does well. So they have tons of copies. You know, they're really pushing it. But yeah, try to get a hold of this book. And like Fred said, try to get the real book because yeah. it's worth it. It's worth having this one.
Definitely. Midtown has a really gigantic warehouse down in Long Island where I know they've got it in stock.
Yeah.
So you could definitely order it.
Order it. I do that sometimes. There's certain vault books that don't quite always make it down here to Tucson that I go through Midtown, and they're great and they pack it. Your book's not going to get damaged. That thing comes mm-hmm. in a tank to my house. So definitely recommend. All right. Now we're on to our last book. Bully Wars, number one. Rufus, the biggest bully in Rottenville since kindergarten, suddenly goes from bully to bullied. On the first day of high school, he's forced to make a shaky pact with his favorite geeks, Spencer and his twin sibling besties, Edith and Ernie. Together, they have to find a way to survive the Hunger Games-like contest simply known as Bully Wars, where the winner will rule the school. Written by Scotty Young, art and cover Aaron Conley, colorist Jean-Francois Bellew, letters by Nate Pecos, variant cover by Scotty Young, and a second variant cover by Scott Brown, designed by Kerry Hall, published by Image, Bully Wars. Fred, go ahead with Bully Wars.
Okay, so now I wasn't sure what I was getting into with this book. I mean, it looked cartoonish, but when I opened up the book, it was so bright in the colors, and it almost felt like I was watching like Ed, and Eddie on Cartoon Network.
Yes.
That's the feel I got from this book. To me, it was fun. It was kind of gross. It was a little Ren and Stimpy style to me a little too, with, you know, some of the grotesque things, but
yeah.
It was also had a pretty decent story because it was showing three kids that were bullied by a bully. And then he went to high school and he was getting bullied. So he just learned about karma. So that was a good twist. And that's also kind of tongue twister to say bullied that many times. But I thought the characters were a bit stereotypical with, you know, the nerds and the kids that weren't very smart. And then you had the stereotypical bully. But other than that, I mean, I enjoyed it. It was a good read. It was fun. It was a different pace, especially coming from something that was so deep, like Border Town, and then reading this. Mm-hmm. Like it was definitely a palate cleanser. You know, it was good. It kind of made the night exciting. But what I didn't understand is I really thought that Scotty Young drew this, and then I found out that it wasn't, and I was like, wow, it looked like Scotty Young drew it. So I was like, well done.
Yeah, same. Real fast, same. I got fooled by that too. I assumed that Scotty was drawing it like he does his I Hate Fairyland. Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
This was definitely fun to read because it was very lighthearted, very fun, a little charming. Great character designs. I love the designs of all the characters. Like Fred says, they were like played with them geometrically. They look like Ed, and Eddie characters with, like, you know, different proportions and stuff like that. It was really fun to read and look at. It was fun. I think you should check it out if you like lighthearted, you know, funny stuff.
Yeah, that's how I felt. It felt like, you know, a kid's cartoon. And I kind of was warned when I bought it. The guy at the shop goes, you know what, if you like kind of a young kiddie, a comic cartoon, I'm like, oh, I expected it to be a little more like I Hate Fairyland, and it was going to be pretty violent. And he goes, no, it's not like that. And so I was prepared. But the one thing I wasn't prepared, like you said, is for it not to be drawn by Scotty Young. But you're right. This, what's his name? Aaron Conley. Same type of style, if you ask me. And very fun, very light. And the concept of a bully being bullied, and he has to turn to the poor kids he's been bullying for years for help. What, that's a cool little idea, and I can see lots of fun stuff happening going forward. And like a cartoon, they can do a lot of things that in realism wouldn't work, and they can play off a lot of fun. And so, yeah, nice, like you said, compared to some of the deeper books we had this week, it was a nice addition to kind of take a break.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the book was pretty entertaining. You know, some people might be turned off by the name Bully Wars, especially in today's climate, but this was definitely lighthearted, and it was fun. I mean, it was a good time.
Yeah, fun seems to be the key word in this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, if we're going to give scores to this, Chris, what would you give Bully Wars?
I'd give it a 3. It was good.
Excellent. And Fred?
I'll give it a 4.
Wow, high score. I would give it a 3, too. Maybe because I was hoping for a little more of it being a little bit more adult than what it was. But yeah, I liked it a lot. I'll definitely come check out a second one. Good book.
Yeah.
And Scotty Young does a good job of writing it, even though he didn't draw it. I was hoping he didn't draw it. And, you know, we're going to go ahead and segue into Scotty Young as our artist spotlight of the week. We picked him partially because we want to also spotlight an artist. And I was looking at him from also the artist point of view. We've spotlighted a bunch of writers. So I wanted to look at some guys that are also. So this is somebody who's done both art and writing recently. He gained the majority of his fame drawing for Marvel and some independent stuff. He had he worked on a Wizard of Oz series that has won many awards, and that's where he got his claim to fame, and then he moved on and did a lot of work for Marvel. So Chris, do you have anything to say about Scotty Young?
I haven't read any of the Wizard of Oz stuff. The latest thing I've read from him is the Deadpool.
Yes.
So he's the new writer on Deadpool. And, you know, he has some big shoes to fill because the previous run was phenomenal. But I think he's done a great job so far. I'm really enjoying this run. It's funny. It's really good. And also his art style. I also, you know, thought that, you know, he drew that one because he has kind of that weird, you know, childlike, mm-hmm. you know, whimsical art style that's really recognizable. So he's a great artist. I know him from Deadpool, but I know his list goes way beyond that. So.
Excellent. And Fred?
Well, I have that Scotty Young was born April 3rd, 1978. And I found out some things, like he moved from Tennessee to Chicago in 2000 and began working for Marvel Comics. Some of his early work, they include illustrating the Spider-Man Legend of the Spider-Clan miniseries as part of the Marvel, is it Mangaverse?
Yeah, I remember that.
He did that, and as well as he did the Human Torch and the New X-Men. I think he also wrote that issue. I'm not quite sure. I thought that's what it said. It also, Young illustrated a couple of things like New Warriors, the miniseries. I think that was released in 2005. I know he draws like a lot of variant covers, like Cable and Deadpool, things like that. Like you mentioned, the Wizard of Oz books that he did. What else did he do Rocket Raccoon?
Rocket Raccoon that came out before the first Guardians movie, which is a perfect character for him. He really wanted to do Deadpool. He's wanted to do Deadpool for years, but somebody else was already on it. He said it was the perfect book for him to write. So this was kind of like his book. He really wanted Deadpool. So he's definitely going to put it. And, you know, those variants are called baby hero variants. That's the actual term for him. And he's done a lot. Anytime there's a major book, he does a variant. Like the Fantastic Four book that just came out, there was a variant for that. Anything major that Marvel puts out, I guarantee you there'll be something for that first X-Men from that thing coming out. He'll probably do something for Spider-Verse. Spider-Gideon. He's going to do something for all those. Whenever there's a major book, there's a Scotty Young variant. Yeah.
I kind of have on my phone case. It's the little Scotty Young Spider-Man hanging upside down. The little TV Spider-Man he does. So nice. Yeah.
At Image, he's he has I Hate Fairyland. It's just wrapped up, and then we start Bully Wars, and he's also starting something called Midwest. It's coming out in November, and that one's going to be a little more serious that he's writing. It's going to be about a kid in the Midwest who kind of runs away, and the premise is that in the Midwest, most people don't leave their little towns. He's going to leave his little town and actually explore, which is something that's different from most people in that part of the world, and the adventures he has on this quest. So that's a book to watch for that's coming out soon. And a fun little tidbit. I don't know if any of you have read Hack and Slash, Tim Seeley's book that he also is much like Scotty Young. He draws and he illustrates. Scotty Young makes a cameo. There is one issue where they go to a comic con and Scotty Young's in it, Kirkman's in it, and someone else in it, but I can't remember. And like zombie monsters attack the con and they kill Kirkman. They kill a lot of people, but Young's the only one that survives. He survives to go on and make another cameo later on in the series. And of course, he's drawn some variants for Hack and Slash as well, because I saw him and Seeley must be buddies. So it's kind of cool. But anyone else have anything else on Scotty Young?
Just, his art is great. Like you said, those variants he does are so wonderful. Like, I really enjoy the Black Panther one he's got. Like you said, Fantastic Four one he did. He did one, I think, for Deadpool. I want to kind of get those. He got one I really like for Spider-Gwen as well.
I have a couple of prints, two of ones he did. I have an X-Men one, Baby X-Men. And then I don't know what my other one is. I have two that he's done. Yeah.
Nice.
Very cool. All right, well, that's it for this week on our Artist Spotlight. So we're going to move on to what we're reading, what we're watching, anything comic book related we want to share with everybody. So, Fred, we're going to hit you first. Have you read anything interesting? Have you watched anything interesting?
Yeah, kind of up my reading game this week. I don't know how, because we've been at the hockey rink quite a bit lately. But I read a lot of Aftershock. I read Dark Arc 10, Cullen Bond. Man, that series is super good. I read Relay 3. That book is super deep. A book that I really liked a lot was United States versus Murder, Inc. Or Murder, Inc. How they say it in New York. Chris didn't get it. Chris, you didn't get that?
I got it.
You're not a Ja Rule fan?
Yeah.
Dang.
Murder. Now let me laugh.
No, but we did want to ask you a question since we got here. Chris is now in the beginning, his first run, you said you read it.
Yeah.
Was it like, was she a young girl like she is in this one? Did you read this one?
This one I didn't read.
Okay.
This one I didn't get a chance to read this one. The older one, now, I'm not an expert. I don't want anyone who's like a big fan to get mad. It was a long time ago. But based on what I remember, it was just kind of about like the mafia taking over half of the country and kind of going to war with like the United States government. I don't know if that's what the new
one is. So is there a female like hitman in the original? Or a female assassin that works for one of the crews?
In the original, I believe it's a dude.
Oh, okay. See, that's what we were trying to figure out, because I was reading the solicit for the original, and it makes it sound like, yes, the main character is a guy, but this character, this female, is also in it, but she's already an established assassin. And in the one we just read, she's a little girl. So I'm thinking this is almost a prequel to the original series.
I gotta check that out. I'm going to read it and let you guys know.
And it felt a little Hit Girl to me too. It felt like Hit Girl. It felt like a Goodfellas with the mob stuff. Well, I said Hit Girl because it's a little over the top, the way the little girl kind of loses it and kills this guy. It's like, okay.
I definitely would say it's like Hit Girl meets like Professional, because she's learning how to do hits in the beginning. Nice. So it's all new. I liked it, but I mean, they had me with the mafia part. Another book I read was Justice League 7. And that's still a good book. I read Cover. I thought that was pretty decent. It wasn't as great as this one, but it was good. Paper Girls 24 I read. I also read Asgardians of the Galaxy 1. I loved it. I thought it was great. Nice. It's another Cullen Bunn book. Silver Surfer Annual I read as well. Because I just want another Silver Surfer book. So I had to get this one.
How was that one? I didn't get that one.
I thought it was pretty decent. I thought the story was okay. I mean, I just bought it just because Silver Surfer, but I didn't like it as much as, say, as Guardians of the Galaxy. I thought it was better, but I'm also partial because that was Cullen Bunn writing it. Mm-hmm. So, and then I picked up La Morta Retribution. Man, I'm having a hard time with my English.
It's all the Spanish you're speaking tonight.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. That book was super good. I'm so glad I picked it up. I thought, like, I think it came out like a week earlier, and you and I were, Andrew, you and I were talking about it, and I was like, you told me that you thought I ordered it, so I contacted Brian. And they sent me an email back immediately, and they're like, no, this isn't the trade paperback that you ordered. So go ahead and go pick that up at your store. We can send it to you. So I immediately, you know, I told the guys at the store to put it aside for me. But yeah. And then one final book I read, and I know this was a question in the past, like a podcast when we did Weatherman. I read Shirtless Bear Fighter, the trade paperback. And I think you asked if the artist and the writer were the same on both books, and now I can for sure tell you that the writer is the same, but the artist is not.
Oh, okay, it's different.
But that book is so crazy. It's so stupid. It's good. I'm serious. Like it's so off the wall. It's like the Naked Gun of comic books.
Okay, so Shirtless Bear Fighter or Hillbilly, whatever the one was you read yesterday. What's which one? If I have to only read one,
I would say Shirtless Bear Fighter is a better time. The other ones delves in like kind of magic stuff, and you know, I think we had enough of that kind of stuff from the Border Town book, so we'll leave that alone.
Okay. All right, Chris, what have you been reading?
I didn't read anything with any hillbillies.
Well, you read Bordertown, kind of.
Yeah. Oh, man. Something cool I read was there's a trade paperback. I think it may have come out either this month or last month, but I don't remember which one. It's called Flags of Our Fathers, and it's about the first time Captain America met Black Panther. Now, this isn't T'Challa. This is T'Challa's grandfather.
Oh, wow.
And this was a really interesting story. I actually really suggest it to you guys. It's during World War II. Mm-hmm. And it's about the Nazis trying to attack Wakanda because they want the vibranium there.
Oh, okay.
And all I can say, it does not end well for the Nazis.
Oh.
But, okay. Yeah, a defining part of it is just the relationship between Captain America and Black Panther and their symbol and how they are, you know, symbolic of what their country stand for. Mm-hmm. And so that was a really interesting book. Oh, man, put me on the spot.
I'm sorry.
Sorry. No, I'm going to get the information to you as soon as this is done. I'll probably you know, write it in the comments underneath the post when we post the episode. But yeah, it's really, really good. It's a little bit weird too. I've never seen a World War II story so weird. It's got some really weird characters. Something else I've been reading is I've reread the last arc of On the Wolverine. I guess they put Old Woman Laura as a trade, so we get all the books together. I read that, reread that, made me sad again. Right. What else did I read? I've been reading a lot of the digital only stuff that's been coming out. So like the Luke Cage stuff. What else?
How are those? Only?
Cloak and Dagger. They're really good. Dennis Hopeless writes Cloak and Dagger. And I'm a really big fan of his because he wrote the Jean Grey solo series. I think maybe a year back. I think that was 2017 going into 2018. The Cloak and Dagger one is really good. Luke Cage is really good. I believe these are going to come out in print. So if you're like waiting for print, they will come out in trade. Because I just got there was a Black Panther one that was digital only called, I think, Long Live the King or Long Live Black Panther. One of those two where it's two writers. So it's the main Black Panther writer and someone else. And they kind of teamed up for this one. And it kind of talks about how T'Challa became the Black Panther. So like kind of his teenage formative years and him learning his lessons to become, you know, the Black Panther and the King that, you know, we know and love today. So that's mostly what I've been reading.
I've read a lot of the same things you did, Fred. I haven't gotten all my comics yet. I'm trying the DCBS and they haven't arrived, so I read Justice League. Very good. I liked Hawkgirl was a beast in Justice League. Haven't seen Hawkgirl kick butt like that in a while. She was definitely the star of this issue. I read Batman. It was one of those filler issues in between arcs. But it was a very good story. It showed Dick Grayson as a child and Dick Grayson as an adult. So the story kind of goes with Bruce is consoling Dick because he has lost his parents. It's right after he adopted him, and all the, you know, he doesn't want to be helped. He doesn't want to be taken care of, and he's fighting. And now you have a grown up Grayson trying to get Bruce to talk about his hurt over Selina leaving him at the altar. So it goes back and forth with the two of them, showing him as a kid, showing him as an adult. And there's some great interactions, you know, because Bruce doesn't want to show any emotion, doesn't want to let Nightwing know that he's hurt. You know, he's trying to make it just business as usual. I'm Batman. I don't want to talk about this stuff. But Grayson is persistent. He's constantly there. He's persistent. We can talk about it whenever. Or we can just watch a football game together. It was just a really nice, intimate Batman story as a fan of both those characters. It was kind of, you know, I know it's just a filler in between whatever the next arc is, but I enjoyed it a lot. And then, like you, I enjoyed USA vs. Murder, Inc. a lot. Cover, I liked parts, and I'm still in the middle with it. It reminded me a little bit of Alias. And not exactly like Jessica Jones, the character, but the way it was drawn, a lot of pictures on faces, the watercolor side, very much from my age. And I think there's some potential there. And what, two books about people who write comics. You know, we get the one in War Bears, and now we get this guy's a comic book writer, and he's got a spy who wants to, for some reason, use him for something. So it has potential. It's very Bendis. I think these two are probably the better two of the four Bendis books. But Cover does not rank as high as USA Murder, Inc. because Cover had a Batman cover in it. So that's the third Bendis book. So Murder, Inc. versus the USA had no Batman cover. It had a giant-ass ad for Superman, but it was an ad. It wasn't just a cover, like special art in there. So 3 out of 4. Have had Batman covers in them.
So. He's not even writing Batman, dude.
You know what? I found out he is. You know what he's writing a Batman story for? He is writing a Batman story for those giant comic books in Walmart. Tom King is writing a Superman story, and Bendis is writing a Batman story. And I found out because I want to get the King Superman. I'm hearing good things about it. And then someone made a joke. You guys flipped. Because you have Bendis writing Batman in his book, and I had no idea. No one's really talking about that, but Bendis is writing a Batman story for those giants. Okay,
so I take that back.
Yeah, I just found out, and it's not like they're promoting it. But I just
there's not a single Walmart in New York City, actually.
Yeah, but like Vertigo, Borderlands didn't have a Batman, didn't have a Villalobos Batman cover in the back, you know? So A little cheating there with that. We just like making fun of the fact that Bendis is riding a little Batman coattails. Anything else, Fred?
No, I didn't draw a Batman cover either, so...
Yeah. Why not? You could at least draw a Tom King Batman cover. Have you seen Tom King?
Yeah, yeah. Sides? Oh, man.
When he defaces people's comics. Yeah. All right.
I'll never ask him to sign one of my stuff.
I was showing you guys those pictures of Charlie Soule, man. He just wrote little X's all over my X-Men book, and I looked up and I was like, wow, you just really did that, didn't you?
So what else have I been? Oh, Spider-Man came out today on PlayStation 4. So
did you start playing it yet?
When this is done recording. Yeah, I played it last night, you know, like a responsible adult. I stayed up until around 2 or 3 a.m. knowing I had to wake up in the morning. That's a great game. Because this is the first time that, like, you play a Spider-Man game and you really get to, like, know Peter. So, like, in the middle of a fight, like, Aunt May will call you to see if, like, your dinner reservation is still on. And he's, like, in the middle of fighting, like, Kingpin. And he's like, yeah, yeah, we're still on, you know. And I'll call you later, you know, stuff like that. So that was really good. Been watching some movies with the wife as usual. You know, we watched Homecoming. It was her first time watching Homecoming. You know, she really enjoyed that.
Anyone start Iron Fist? Did anyone start watching it yet? I haven't either. I was going to start last night and I was just too tired. I may watch some tonight. Fred, did you start Iron Fist?
No, I haven't.
What are you hearing about it?
That it's better, but that doesn't mean much because the last one wasn't very good. So, but that it's better. Than the first series was, first season was.
Maybe we'll talk about it on next week's show a little bit.
Yeah, if I get a chance to watch a few. I actually have to watch a couple more Luke Cage before I watch it. I didn't quite finish the
Luke Cage. Oh, you haven't finished Luke Cage.
No, I liked it, but then things happen and I got busy and and other things. And my daughter's watching different things and I don't want to make her change the channel. I just let her watch what she's watching. But
okay,
I need to sit down and watch that so I can jump on to. I think I have 2 episodes left of Cage. But yeah, very cool. I do like it though, Diamondback.
That's a good. That's a good show.
Not Diamondback. What's his name? No, it's not Diamondback. What's the name of the? Oh, what's the Jamaican guy's name?
Yeah, what is his name?
It's not Diamondback, is it? No.
Nah, it's Damn, I can't remember.
I can't either.
Bushmaster. It's Bushmaster.
Bushmaster, yes. Yeah. I knew it was a snake, but I couldn't remember what snake it was. Yeah, Bushmaster. Very cool. All right, does anyone else have anything to add, or we'll go ahead and call it a night?
Oh.
All right, well, once again, thanks for listening. My name is Andrew. You can find me at Real Comics, R-E-E-L-C-O-M-I-C-S. You can find our podcast at Street Level Floppy, STREETLVLFLOPPY. You can find us, our show, on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, YouTube, wherever. Please leave a review, subscribe, so you can find us all the time. Chris, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter as well at panels_hoodies. There's a blog there if you're interested in some of my own personal opinions. Like Andrew said, please, if you're returning, you know, this is episode 4, if you're returning, please leave a review. Let us know what you think of the show, ways that, you know, we can improve. Maybe there's a book or something, an indie book that, you know, that's on your radar that we haven't talked about that you know, are interested in. Hit us up on Twitter. Tell us about it. Please. We welcome it.
Yes, definitely. Fred, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at ComicsFred. That's about it. I've been kind of staying away from it, though. You know, it's a little toxic at times, but...
Well, if they hit you direct, everything will be okay.
Yes, because I always go on and I check and see if I have to, you know, maybe retweet or answer somebody. You know, I always check it, but I kind of, you know, I'm spending a lot of time at the hockey rink lately, so I don't find much time on my phone as much, but yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, any shout-outs that you have, Fred? You were mentioning a couple of Professor Frenzy show and...
Yes, I mean, we've gotten a lot of, like, you know, positive feedback, and we do kind of listen. I do listen to a lot of podcasts, and, you know, like A Gal Walks Into a Comic Book Shop is a good podcast if you want to change a pace, something different. The First Issue Club, that crew is pretty funny.
Yeah, they're a funny crew. I listen to their show. Very funny.
Yeah, I mean, I totally dig the, like, the things that they do and the vibe that they have. They kind of say some things that I think under my breath that I'm not afraid to share yet on here. But, I mean, I think we're getting to the point where I'm just going to open up and I might say some more things, but I don't want to yet.
Yeah, they let it fly a little bit. Professor Frenzy show is great. There's a lot of great information on that show. I enjoy it. I haven't listened to the one you were talking about yet. That's one I need to try. The Gal Walks. What is it? The Gal Walks?
Walks Into a Comic Book Shop.
Comic Shop. Okay, I have to check that
out. And then, you know, of course, you know, the Nation Nerds, Mark, Leo, Hiram, Rico, those guys you must listen to. Those guys are great. They have good camaraderie, you know. Rico could probably come on the show once in a while because he likes indies as much as we do.
Except we have to put some Valiant on our ink.
Yes. Although he probably unsubscribed last week, so who knows? We might, you know. We'll see.
Yeah, he was disappointed in our kind of the way we hit Euthanauts a little bit.
Oh, yeah. No.
He didn't like the emo comments.
So. Oh, no.
Yeah.
But that's all good. Everyone has their opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would have been perfect for the border town because didn't the Chupacabra legend start in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, I saw that he was having a conversation with the writer from that the Chupacabra is actually originated in Puerto Rico and then it migrated down to the Southwest. Well, that's pretty interesting.
Isn't Euthanauts the one that I said I was going to give a one, but the art was too good to give it a one. So I guess, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Rico probably unfollowed you on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
We were rough on that book, but hey, we're being honest.
I mean, not every book's for everyone, so, you know, we all have different tastes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right, guys. Well, we'll go ahead and call it a night, and we'll catch you guys next week. Fred?
Yeah. Just like the streets we call our home, show some love for the creator. We out.